Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets. It's O-Behave with Arden Moore, the show that teaches you how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Join Arden as she travels coast to coast to help millions better understand why cats and dogs do what they do. Get the latest scoop on famous faces, their perfectly pampered pets, and who's walking who in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails, garner great pet tips, and have a doggone fur-flying fun time. So get ready for the pause and applause as we unleash your O-Behave host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome to the O-Behave show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Hey, you're about to meet not one, but two heroes. Together, they are saving lives and unleashing pure love. I am honored to welcome to our show the captain of Fire Station 31 at Miami-Dade and her amazing greyhound. Please give pause and applause to Captain Sean Capanna and her service dog, Charlie. Welcome, welcome.
Hi.
Look at Charlie. Charlie's digging it.
I love the good ear scratch, you know.
Yeah, Charlie goes, this is my best side. No, that's my best side. Hey, everyone, just strap yourselves in because their story is all about rescuing and generating hope. Captain Sean, that just sounds good. Captain Sean, how long have you been a captain in Miami-Dade Fire Department?
Over 15 years at this rank, but I've got totally 26 years with Miami-Dade Fire Rescue.
Wow. Now, most kids, when they, you know, they dream of, you know, maybe being an astronaut or something. Did you always want to be a firefighter?
Well, I actually wanted to be three things: a school teacher, a nurse, and an astronaut.
Okay.
But they didn't work out, and I ended up on the fire department.
How did that happen?
I had moved to Miami, and, you know, I used to work out. I was very athletic, and I saw all the fire engines driving around, and I just knew that I could do it, and I always love a good challenge. So sure enough, I went by, visited some stations, and I just kind of fell in love, like, with the trucks and the hoses and, you know, the station life. And so eventually I started applying to get hired.
It's not easy, is it?
No, it isn't. There's a lot of competition and you have to be in very good shape. You have to pass physical tests, written tests, psychological tests. So yeah, it took me about 5 years, but eventually I got hired.
And I mean, you and I have something in common. We have tall phone voices. How tall are you?
I'm 5'3" and a half.
Okay. You got me by an inch. Okay. You got me by an inch. That didn't matter, did it?
No, it didn't. As long as you could do it, you could do it. Then you pass.
All right. So you have a program, and I want people to realize it's tough being a firefighter, isn't it?
Yes.
And there is issues with mental wellness and PTSD and suicide. Is there some things you can share with people that they may not realize how much those things impact firefighters more so than the general public?
Yeah. So when you think about firefighter illness and injury, you think about cancer and injuries, falls from buildings and stuff like that. But until recently, nobody considered mental health. So when you think about our job, what we do is we go and basically see the worst of humanity every third day of our lives. And it, after a certain amount of time, can also start being pervasive into your personal life. So for instance, there was a run of pediatric drownings that we had 1 year in North Miami Beach, child after child after child after child. So when you have children and you go home and, you know, your spouse says, hey, we're going to take the kids to the lake, the first thing you end up saying is, oh, no, we're not. And it's not easy to see those things happening in the neighborhoods that you work and grew up in. And, you know, so sometimes it can take its toll if you don't. I mean, we're very good about taking care of our bodies and our physical health, but we weren't very good at all taking care of our mental health. So recently, mental wellness in the fire department and really for responders in general has been a big deal. And that's what this program has become about.
So it is called, it's Response Canine Teams. Is that correct?
Crisis response canine teams, yes.
Okay, so tell us what that is. And we're going to get to Charlie's backstory in a minute, but Charlie's kind of the captain of the crisis response.
It's always, it's actually about him more so than me. Everybody knows his name if they remember mine, you know.
That's okay though, right?
Yeah. So I started the program in 2016. We started doing our studies at the station with Charlie. In 2015, I joined the peer support team. And what the peer support does is it's firefighters trained.
Okay.
And after tough calls, like a pediatric drowning, like a firefighter suicide, what we do is we have a team, we take the units out of service, and we have a team go to the station. They get a chance to relax and, you know, talk to a group of people if they want to. And we bring the dogs, and it's a chance for them to process what they've just experienced. We're so used to running call after call after call and not even allowing ourselves to think about what just happened or what we just saw. And look, we're human beings. We're not supermen and superwomen. We know that now. And by not processing any of this is how we ended up developing PTSD. Along with PTSD comes suicide ideation. So our department is very big. We have about 80 fire stations, but we've had 31 suicides documented between active and retired from when our first documentation until now.
Oh, man. And I want to talk to you about this because you yourself thought about it.
Yes. Yes. So in 2014, I got my diagnosis of complex PTSD and I started going through all the symptoms and not understanding what was going on. I lost function in every area of my life. And then eventually, yes, had months-long cycles of wanting to kill myself.
When you say symptoms, what were you to help others so they can get help? What were you feeling?
Disorientated. I used to be in the gym every single day since I was 13 up until that point. I lost.
I saw you there. No, just kidding.
I lost interest in everything that I used to like. I started having reactivity as far as anger. I would faint out in public. I got anxiety so bad. That's another reason that when I decided that I wasn't going to do that to myself, I had to do something. I did try therapy for a year, but the therapist said there was nothing they could do for me. So that's when things got really bad. I know. So I had my dogs and I ran a call one day. It was a domestic violence call. And as I was writing the report for her, we were waiting for the ambulance to come transport her. And out of her bedroom walks a dog with a PTSD service dog vest on. Now, I knew I had it at that point. But I didn't know that there were dogs that could help with PTSD. So I asked the patient while we were sitting there waiting for the ambulance, how does the dog help you? How did you get it to become a service dog? So she told me and I went home, looked it up, and I found one of three trainers right here in Fort Lauderdale, Daniel De La Rosa, that could actually train greyhounds to be service dogs because it was kind of unheard of back then.
Well, yeah, everybody thinks of the golden retriever, the Labrador retriever, but I'm sorry, let's give it up for the greyhounds because I've been watching you on this podcast and Charlie was listening to you and feeling your emotion and came right to you.
Yeah.
You can't, that's intuitive. That's a pretty amazing dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you rescued Charlie. Tell us about that. And Charlie's rescuing you. So let's tell us the backstory to Charlie.
Yeah. So I fell in love with greyhounds about 15 years ago.
What is it about greyhounds you love?
Well, they're muscular and lean, but they're also very docile and sweet. Right. They call them the 45 mile an hour couch potato for a reason. He will sleep 20 out of 24 hours if allowed.
Okay.
Yeah. So I love that breed. I fell in love and I went and fostered for the rescue. I had five of my own greyhounds. I failed miserably as a foster many times, but I've fostered, you know, over 20. I lost count. And my responsibility was to put weight on them. So they were pretty emaciated when they would come from the track. And, you know, if they needed medications or to be treated for worms or to heal broken legs, and this way they could be adopted healthier, which would increase their odds of being adopted.
Yeah. And I used to live in South Florida. I worked at the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel. I remember in Palm Beach County, they had the Greyhound races. Here comes Rusty. And Charlie was one of the Greyhound racers, right?
He sure was, yeah. So I had stopped fostering for a little while because there weren't any to foster. And my own Greyhound, Zen, he needed a buddy. So I called Michelle at the Friends of Greyhound Rescue. And I said, listen, I'm ready for another one. And I said, I want a black female. Because the black dogs, for some silly racing whatever, just wouldn't get adopted as much as all the other dogs.
Okay.
Like, black dogs didn't win as much. So people honestly wouldn't adopt them as much. So I told her, I said, I'm bringing home a black female.
Yes,
and she goes, all right, let me go up to Palm Beach and bring some back. I'll get you your dog. So I was finishing up a tattoo at 8:30 at night. She called me that she had just gotten back from Palm Beach County, that she had my dog. So I said, great. I went right over to her house. She had kennels in her garage. And I saw two black greyhounds. I went right up to both crates. I opened them both up. I'm playing with them. And she goes, that's the one I brought back for you. And it was a white male. So I walked right past Charlie, didn't even see him. And then I said to her, well, what am I going to do now? Look, this one's already in my lap. And she goes, look, just take Charlie home. If anything, bring him back and have one of these, you know. So I said, okay, you know, and I put Charlie in the car, and I had never gone back with him again since.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, everybody, we're speaking with Captain Sean Capanna. She is at the Miami-Dade Fire Department. She helped create the crisis response canine teams. We're going to find out more after we take this break. You all know the drill. You got to sit, stay. We'll be right back.
Time for a pause. Four furry ones actually sit and stay. All Behave will be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to the O Behave Show with Arden Moore on Pet Life Radio.
O Behave is back with more tail-wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now back to your fetching host, America's Pet Edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome back to the O Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. I'm with my buddy, Captain Sean Capanna, and Charlie. Now, Charlie, I understand, was a racer, how many, like 55 races?
55 races in 2 years, yep.
And something happened to Charlie. What happened to Charlie?
Yeah, so he was a fast boy, and like many of the fast dogs, they would crash into each other. So his last race, he crashed into another racing dog. He broke his leg, slit his neck, and that was pretty much the end of his racing career. Charlie was
broke his leg?
Yes, he has a metal rod in his back leg.
Oh my gosh.
It's pretty common in injury when you work at the rescue. Most of them do. My other Greyhound has a rod in his back leg too. So yeah, so that retired him from racing, and Charlie was one of the lucky ones. He did get to go to one of the rescues, and they put him back together. And a year later was when Michelle went to get him, and he became mine all mine.
What makes him a good service dog? What makes Charlie a good service dog?
First of all, he has the qualities of a Greyhound. He's very docile. He doesn't bark, very calm, laid back, but he is an empath.
Explain that.
So he just seems to know when I'm not okay. And he also has learned to smell my anxiety. So when we produce or change emotions, we humans produce pheromones.
Right.
And they can smell those pheromones. And since they can smell in degrees, since I would have anxiety attacks so bad, I would automatically faint without doing the struggle to breathe first.
Wow.
And he would know. And what he would do is he would come, stick his muzzle in my belly, and prevent the anxiety attack from happening. If I was standing up, he would do the same thing. He's a big boy, so unlike other service dogs, it's hard for him to jump in my lap without knocking me over. So we train him to come face in to me and put his nuzzle right into my belly. There's a pressure point there, which they say stimulates the feeling of being in the womb.
Now, we have to give him a big O for oxytocin. What does that mean? And tell us how service dogs like Charlie are unleashing oxytocin.
Yeah. So when they do one of two things, a gaze, which is a really intense look into the person's eyes, or when we do something called friendly petting, you know, getting our fingertips into their skin, our bodies naturally release oxytocin, which in turn favorably modulates all our stress hormones, other chemicals as well. Dopamine is released and oxytocin, and it's mutual. So they have the same change in their body also. So the effect works both ways.
Now, I've been told, I'm no scientist, but I always call dopamine the happy hormone. And I call oxytocin the cuddle hormone. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And dogs do attach like children. We know that now. And oxytocin is the hormone that, you know, the mom secretes with her baby for attachment.
So you and I have something else in common besides having a love of dogs. You had to put up with me for 2 days, 16 hours in August. To become a certified Pro Pet Hero instructor. I'm a master instructor in pet first aid, and you were one of my students. So you're expanding your platform, right?
Yes.
What do you hope to do?
That class is required for every handler on my team.
Oh, good. Good.
Yes.
So tell us about putting up with me for 2 days.
Your sense of humor made it a pleasure. It was not boring in any way, shape, or form. I actually used some of your things in the class when I taught it, you know, about the toilet paper, fire station life. They actually do complain which way the toilet paper is facing, believe it or not.
That's to wrap a wound. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. And the surveys that they did after class were amazing. It was their favorite class that I teach them. And it's my favorite class now to teach. What a pleasure and how fun. And everybody loved it.
And you got to meet pet safety dog Kona and pet safety cat Casey. Okay, they're therapy pets. They're not in the level of the stratosphere of Charlie. But what about Kona? I think Kona and Charlie are very intuitive. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So being a fire captain, you're a badass, aren't you? In a good way.
Thank you. I know there was a time that I was, you know, I'm definitely off the truck now to run the program, to build it, which is an honor and a blessing. So I'm slowing down a little bit, but that's okay. Cause I really love, nobody else on the fire department gets to do what I do. So I actually have the best job on the fire department.
So tell us what's going to happen in the next day or two. The holidays are coming. What's something that you and Charlie are going to be doing?
Well, there are events that we're being invited to, but I do have a concern with the recent canine illness going around.
Mysterious illness, yes.
Yeah, so we're kind of taking precautions, and I don't want to bring him somewhere to group him up with other dogs that might be an issue.
That's a good
but
point.
But they are still working on the fire department, and if we do, God forbid, have a tragedy in the state of Florida, that's another team that he helped start. Then he will be responding there as well.
I have lived in Florida for 9 years. I went through Hurricane Andrew and some other things. Mother Nature can be pretty wicked, but so can other things. So I wanted you to give a little bit of insight about Charlie's role with things like the Surfside condo collapse in Miami. That was horrible. You had the Parkland High School shootings on, of course, Valentine's Day. And Hurricane Ian. So he's had a role in all of those?
Yes.
So let's take them one at a time. Which one first?
All right. Yeah. So we were still in the fire station we officially activated Charlie in 2017. That's when he became an official member of our peer support team and started going out on department responses. We call that a local response. Parkland was our first official deployment where
we brought him
to go help other firefighters. So if you think about it, Arden, there's always plenty of therapy dogs on scenes of tragedies, right? But no one ever thought about bringing them for the responders.
Exactly.
And also, you know, the civilians don't have access to our stations. We do peer support. So you have to be a firefighter to go help another firefighter or police officer. So I was the only one standing in the peer support group for the responders with a dog. So to be on a team like this, you have the handler has to have peer support training. You have to have your canine CPR and first aid. You have to take at least a 2-hour self-care class. The dog has to be nationally registered certified therapy dog and then go on to the crisis response training that that we've developed in the state for response agencies.
So without naming an individual, what did Charlie do to one of the firefighters at Parkland?
It was interesting, and you can really start to see the benefits. You know, some of them were hurting. He'll always gravitate towards them. Somebody wasn't really interested in talking, then started crying. So that was the first time I had ever seen Charlie do a gaze.
When he does a gaze, can you expand on that? What do you mean?
So he kind of puts his head down and stares directly right into somebody's eyes.
Okay.
They don't know what he's doing at that point. So I give him a little coaching note, stare right back into his eyes, you know, get your hands on both sides of his head, go ahead and start petting. And they could feel the relief right away.
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
So there was another guy, and he wasn't really talking. Charlie reached his paw up to the guy, and he put his arm out back towards Charlie. And next thing you know, he started talking to Charlie, but he was talking. So there's all kinds of stories and things I could share.
Surfside, the condominiums, you know, that had been there for so long. It was something that everybody knew, those condos in Miami. And it collapsed. So what was Charlie's role there?
So I got the call at 4 a.m. from the alarm office that they needed the peer support canines for a building collapse. And so just so you know, normally peer support is after a call, right?
Yeah.
Why would they need us at a building collapse? So this is called an extended incident, a very large incident. That's good that we're going to be there a long time working. So I turned on the news, and sure enough, there were the fire engines on Collins Avenue. So I grabbed his go pack, grabbed a cup of coffee, a couple of uniforms for myself, and headed down to Surfside. The piers, the human piers, were assigned 12-hour shifts. And what they did is as the crews came off the pile, anybody needed to talk, take a break, get them some food, you know, peer support, and give them a chance to talk about what they just saw. I'm not going to talk about what...
No, I'm not asking you.
Okay. Another role that we had was in the Family Reunification Center.
Okay.
So it started off 2 dogs, okay, 6-hour shifts and 6-hour shifts. And we had intense heat. This is an emergency scene. That's crisis response versus therapy dog. So we had rebar all over the place, glass, crushed cement, a tower was looking like it was going to come down on top of us. So we had to have dogs in the Family Reunification Center and at the pile. And eventually, the requests from the responders, the homicide tent, the medical examiner's tent, and our own USAR teams, we couldn't keep up with the response. So I had to get another crisis response canine agency to handle the family center while we put all our efforts into the responders on the pile. And the reunification center, a lot of people think that that would have been easier than working with the responders, but it wasn't. We would literally get 20 feet inside the door of the family. You know, they were waiting to hear about their loved ones. They would pull us to the side. Hey, you know, we need you. Some of the crews got taken upstairs. I found out right there, people were, being given death notices. For me and Charlie, we were pulled to a man who was, you know, visibly upset. This man grabbed Charlie on both sides of his neck and said, Charlie, go tell those other dogs to find my wife, and collapsed right on top of Charlie. So Charlie doesn't get scared and run away. And he knew to keep contact, physical contact for the oxytocin exchange, right, with the man.
Wow.
So yeah, I don't think anybody realized. At first, it was like they didn't want us there. And then we couldn't keep up with enough teams. So we had 10 canine teams at the time. And that's what we did. We kept rotating crews every time, you know, and the news sensationalized some of the victims. I remember my chief telling me, come on, we need another team out there. They found the 14-year-old. So when they would come off the pile, we'd be there. And what we didn't expect is, you know, here's all the USAR guys covered in everything that they just dug through. They would just take a knee, look up like a zombie, and say, can I pet your dog? Yeah, man, that's what they're here for. when they would get breaks, we'd bring the dogs over to them, goof around. And the cool thing is we started getting responses. Now, that was a 3-week long scene. So after a while, there just wasn't anything to say. We'd hug each other. We'd cry together. But we weren't saying anything at that point. Well, that's really when the dog started to shine. So we would start getting requests. Hey, can I take your dog for a walk? Or hey, can I spend time with your dog without you? Which we normally don't do for the public, but we give them the treat bag, let them be with the dog, tell them some precautions, walk away, and just keep an eye on them from a distance and just let them enjoy the dog. Because whether they knew the science or not, whether they talk or not, they still got the benefits from the dog.
Exactly. And, you know, I think you and I, we should come back as service dogs. That wouldn't be a bad gig, would it?
No, absolutely not. I want to come back as your service dog.
Oh, thank you. I want to come back as yours. So moving forward, is this going to be more of a trend that we're going to see in fire departments, police departments around the country? I do know we've had police officers on that have a new kind of canine cop, if you will, that is emotional support. But I'm seeing kind of a trend. You're kind of starting this. What's happening across the country in this regard, this peer support with service dogs?
It is becoming a trend. Like I said, I also work for the state. After Surfside, they wanted me to help build a program for the state. So I work for the Firefighter Safety and Health Collaborative, and I'm the canine coordinator there, like I am for the department, with similar responsibilities. So I manage all the state responses to Hurricane Ian. We had about 8 dogs that responded to Hurricane Ian for those responders as well. Because in that area, and very different scenes, Surfside was relatively small, but very difficult to manage with all the people around. Hurricane Ian was very spread out. So we had to send teams all over the place. And we were going to firefighters whose home was wiped out from that hurricane, who were still at work, who hadn't even checked on their home yet.
Wow.
Yeah. So stuff like that. We've gotten calls from other states, including California. I just spoke to somebody in Iowa, a police officer not too long ago. So I believe that in local departments, you're going to see like a therapy dog role, or maybe for crisis response, using them in peer support. Police is joining in on that now. Metro-Dade, Miami-Dade PD, City of Miami PD, Miami Gardens PD are all starting their programs. And, we kind of work together and train together. And I think it's happening all throughout the country. Also, the International Association of Firefighters, which is our nationwide union, has had us fly to other states with our dogs when they had a tragedy or an issue to go help them. So our dogs have been to Texas, El Paso, South Carolina, Buffalo, New York. So, yeah.
Do they ride first class?
Well, he has to sit
He's
in the bulkhead.
Guy.
Yeah, so I have to get a bulkhead seat for him. A lot of the other ones can sit under the seats in front of him.
Is he taller than you when he stands up?
Yeah, all my dogs are.
Do you ever feel like Charlie finishes your sentences?
Oh, all the time. He reads my mind.
Give me an example.
I get up off the couch. Now, I know I'm going to go ahead and go lay down and take a nap. Before I could get to the bedroom, he's already jumping in the bed.
Charlie, what are the winning lotto ticket numbers?
Tell mommy first.
Oh, yeah. Tell mommy first. What's a parting message you would like to give? We're talking with Captain Sean Capanna and her amazing service dog, Charlie. What's something you'd like to give?
I think that we have a lot more dog owners out there. Learn more about dogs, about dog behavior. Maybe even communicating better with your dog so you know what they're trying to tell you, because they do communicate with us all the time. Take good care of them and you will get everything back 200-fold. These are special animals. I think that these are angels wrapped in fur, and this dog saved my life. They do have that big of an impact. And if you treat them well, and they deserve it, they'll give you everything.
Well put. Everyone, please, I'm so honored. I really am, Sean, to have you on my show. You too, Charlie. We're speaking with Captain Sean Capanna and service dog Charlie, who's got the sweetest disposition I've ever met. I thought my dog Kona is pretty intuitive. I think the two of them could have a lot to talk about, right?
They'd be buds. Yeah.
They'd be buds. Yeah. Hey, at this time, I also want to give a shout out to my executive producer. He is Mark Winter. He is the man behind the mic in all the shows that occur on Pet Life Radio. Humbly, you are listening to the longest running pet podcast on the planet. We've been on the air since 07. Do me a solid, please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Arden Moore. And I have a graduate right here. I do run Pet First Aid for You. It's a veterinary approved program with my dog Kona and my cat Casey. So I hope you check us out on that. And until next time, this is your flea-free host, Arden Moore, delivering just two words to all you 2, 3, and 4-leggers out there. Oh, behave.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Oh, Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.